Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. And shout out to everybody who's sending me pet pictures on Twitter. You're making my day. And if you love a certain type of canine, or if you love Freemasons, boy, do we have a weird story for you. Hi, I'm Ben.
Hi, I'm Noel. Ben, you always say that if there's a person who doesn't like dogs, then they're instantly like red flagged in your mind. Does that still hold true?
You know, I think it's not just me, Noel. It's a widespread belief. I try not to be judgmental, and I try to work against that prejudice, but it's true. You know, and in all fairness, as I've mentioned on other episodes, there are plenty of people who don't like dogs because they, you know, maybe were injured by one as a child or something like that. But yeah, in general, if I meet someone who's anti-dog, my eyes are a little bit closer on them in general. Super producer Casey Pegram, dogs, yes or no?
Oh, big time fan of dogs and cats, but love dogs, yeah.
Okay, so here's where I stand. I would not say I dislike dogs. I definitely don't, but certain small, very needy breeds of dogs sort of bug me a little bit. Is that okay? Is that an acceptable level of negative feels towards dogs?
You know, I think so much about a given individual dog's behavior is up to the owners. You know, one interesting observation a friend of mine who's a vet made is that small dogs can tend to have behavioral issues because in their heads, they're not small dogs. You know what I mean? They're big alpha bruisers. And if they're treated like babies or coddled and they don't have any appropriate training that you would give to a big dog, then they'll just behave, you know, terribly. That's true. I met some excellent small dogs, Shih Tzu and even Chihuahua. But when I own dogs, I tend to go for larger breeds myself. So teach their own.
I love your polite pronunciation of Shih Tzu, Ben. I think it's very, very good for keeping this a family show.
Oh, thanks, man. We're talking about dogs for a reason today, though, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And I was getting circuitously around to that. It's true. Today is about a different kind of love of dogs, and it's a very particular breed that turns out to be like one of the oldest breed of dog known to humankind, and that's the pug. Those mm-hmm. weird little boys with the squishy faces.
Mm-hmm. And it's surprising that pugs are such an old breed, isn't it? I did not know until we began diving into this episode. You're right. We are circuitous here because we're not just talking about a pug. We're talking about a graven image of a pug. We're talking about a bit of a conspiracy. We're talking about something called the Order of the Pug. If you haven't heard of this, don't beat yourself up. This is a bit of, I would say this is a bit obscure, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. And it's attached to another sort of esoteric topic that many people remain pretty in the dark about, which was the Masonic fraternity, which is or Freemasons. It's something that we've covered pretty extensively on our other show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And I didn't really realize that I assumed Freemasonry was a little more ancient than it actually was as well. It turns out that it was, we don't know exactly how it was established, but we do know that the oldest document that references Masons is something called the Regius Poem, which was printed in 1390, which is still pretty old, but not like ancient, I suppose. And that was actually a copy of an earlier work. In 1717, that's when we start to see kind of more organized formations of what are referred to as Masonic lodges. Four of them sprang up in London, and the first one was called the Grand Lodge of England. And it's then that we start to see a little bit better record keeping in the Masonic order.
Yeah, something like Freemasonry, as we understand it today, did likely exist before 1390, because as you said, the Regis poem is a copy of an earlier work. But when those four lodges Voltron together into a Grand Lodge, that's what we can consider as the modern age of Freemasonry, or whatever we understand Freemasonry as today. And it took off like gangbusters. It was super popular. It took over Europe the way that the Macarena took over radio at some point. A blessedly brief point. The Freemasons spread across Europe. They found their way into the American colonies. They were super popular in colonial America. Let's see, a lot of the founding fathers were Masons: George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Paul Revere, Joseph Warren, and many other notable figures in early American history, including Chief Justice John Marshall. And it kept growing, right? And now it's worldwide.
100%. And Ben, I misspoke earlier and you totally corrected me beautifully. That's right. That Grand Lodge of England was a squishing together a la pug face of those four lodges that existed there in London. It wasn't just one of them. It was a big kind of conglomerate. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I always think of it as an Enlightenment movement. It's all about, you know, bettering yourself through study, through self-discovery and self-improvement even. And it's sort of meant as almost a benevolent organization to help push society forward in a positive way. And they get involved in lots of causes, philanthropy. For example, the Shriners is an offshoot of Freemasonry, and you often see them in their little fez hats riding their small cars and parades, but they also finance a lot of children's hospitals.
Yeah. We have to remember that during the 1800s and early 1900s, the concept of the social safety net was nowhere near as widespread, and Masonry, in many cases, stepped in to fill that void, founding orphanages, like you said, also providing housing and care for widows and homes for the elderly. For a lot of people, this was the closest they would get to some kind of community support. We know the first lodge in the German-speaking world was founded at Hamburg in 1737, and in 1740, Frederick the Great inspired or sparked the establishment of a grand national mother lodge called the Three Globes in Berlin. Then by 1754, there were 19 Masonic lodges in Germany. They're kind of doing the same stuff as the other European lodges, the colonial lodges. What's interesting here is that in step with the evolution and the propagation of Freemasonry, we see the evolution and propagation of conspiracy theories about Freemasonry, of people who are not Masons saying, you know, these guys are up to something. Devil worshiping? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and I can understand where that comes from, because it is an order that's been around for quite a long time, and there's a lot of different things wrapped up in Freemasonry. One of the most important tenets is it is kind of an Enlightenment organization, like we said, so it really emphasizes knowledge and education over mystical things or religion. Even though they use tons of symbols, we know about like Masonic rites and a lot of the ceremonies that are involved in Masonic traditions and ceremonies, they really were not about talking about God. It wasn't a central feature in Freemasonry at all. There's an article from CBS News from 2013, where a Masonic historian named Brent Morris is quoted as saying that he saw Freemasonry as completely separate from this idea of religious fervor and much more of a brotherly organization that was an alternative to so much of the infighting that was happening between Catholics and Protestants and any opposing religious groups. So it really was meant to kind of like say, hey, let's just get along and try to wise up and learn about ourselves and the world and maybe make things a little bit better for everybody.
Yeah, they're essentially saying, look, we can agree that the concept of God or a supreme architect or whatever you want to call it is important, is indeed crucial. We can even say that we're compelled to make the community a better place because of something like God, but we don't have to be dogmatic about it, which is, you know, a watchword of the Catholic Church. And so even though we should bust this myth, even though Freemasons had no truck with atheists, you would get kicked out, shown the door if you were an atheist, even though they were acknowledging what they saw as the divine in their organizations, this was not enough for the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was still having that, are they devil worshipers? Maybe, kind of conversation. And they said, you know, the problem with the Masons is thought crime. They didn't coin the term thought crime, but that's what they were mad about, you know?
No, it's true. They thought that if you separated out that, you know, the importance of God as being first and foremost, then it could become like some kind of like, you know, dangerous political thinking could just run rampant. And there's a really good article in the Vintage News about the Order of the Pug, which we're getting to, that goes into this nicely. So it actually happened that in 1738, Pope Clement XII, using something known as a papal bull, which referred to that seal that would be used to seal all kinds of official decrees, etc., he declared Freemasons to be persona non grata. He essentially outlawed the order entirely.
Yeah, it's true, because they posed a spiritual danger, but to your point, they posed a secular danger, a social danger as well. The Catholic Church at this time had a pretty good thing going socioeconomically and sociopolitically. They benefited from the status quo of monarchies, and Freemasons opposed the status quo of a monarchy. And this meant that the papacy saw Freemasonry as a danger to their current social order and a enemy of the church. You have to remember, this is an organization that historically has had no problem with straight up murdering people for very small disagreements with their opinion on the divine. And they had a problem, especially in Germany. This is why we mentioned the German Freemasons. So a lot of Germans were Catholics and also members of Freemasonry. And this did not dissuade the church from issuing this papal bull against Freemasonry. They saw Freemasonry as something that was helping people without regard to their religion. So if they were helping, for instance, an elderly person, it didn't matter to them whether that person was Protestant or Catholic or some other religion. And that was seen as very, very dangerous. So they took, as you can see in a History 101 article, they took it to the nuclear level. They would excommunicate anyone found to be a member of the Masons.
Yeah, because that level of benevolence is pretty forward thinking, right? I mean, like, Catholics didn't typically mix with non-Catholics. Maybe that's overstating the case. I mean, you know, dogmatically speaking, that would not have been the official line of the Catholic Church, but surely there were other Catholics that would help out those in need despite their religious affiliations or whatever. But this was very much a tenet of Freemasonry, and that did not sit well with his majesty. What do you call a pope? His eminence?
His holiness.
His holiness. Yeah, all of that stuff. So Freemasonry is essentially outlawed as far as the Catholic Church is concerned. You are, you know, under threat of excommunication, which is like the worst thing that could happen to a person. It would be like you're ostracized from your peers, from professionally, society. It would have been really bad news. Absolutely would have been, a ruinous thing to have happen to you. So these Catholics, it's very important to them in Germany to continue being Catholic, you know, because essentially if you're excommunicated, you're like not allowed to be Catholic anymore, which I would think you could still be Catholic in your heart, but so many things, there's so many rules that I guess you could literally have to say like, well, I'm not Catholic anymore because I've been officially excommunicated. It's robbed me of my Catholicism. So they didn't want that to happen. But they also really dug this order. They really dug the whole Freemasonry thing. And so they decided to take it underground. For a secret society, it was already pretty secretive to go like further underground. That's a real escalation there. So they established several members of the Catholic States of Germany who did not want to, you know, publicly renounce the order and quit, but also didn't want to incur the wrath of the Vatican, they formed a group in Vienna in September of 1738, and they called it Mopses. Mopses. I'm trying my best German pronunciation, but Mops is what Germans called pugs.
Yep, September 22nd, 1738. Several members, both of the Catholic Church and Freemasonry, wanted to keep on masoning and keep on Catholicking, so they came up with an off-brand of Freemasonry. It's totally an imitation of Freemasonry. It is, as you said, Noel, Mopsis, Mops Orden, the Order of the Pug. This is the brain child, or I should say the brain puppy, the brain pug of a man named Clemens August of Wittelsbach, Bavaria, is the Elector of Cologne. And basically, he and his Freemason buddies just kind of revised the format. They did a reboot of Masonry, and this facilitated their activities. They chose the pug for reasons, right? It wasn't just the first animal someone saw during the brainstorming session. They thought that the pug had these qualities of loyalty, trust, and steadfast character. And they thought, you know, this is going to help us on a PR front if the Pope gets mad. That's basically what they thought. And then they went around and started getting the patronage of very powerful people in Germany. They went around getting protection, essentially, from princes of the empire. They would make those princes the grand masters of the Order of the Pug. And the Duke of Bavaria, very powerful in his own right, took it under his protection. That's the official story of how this off-brand masonry chose the pug. But I believe there's another theory here, isn't there, Noel?
That there is, Ben. That there is. And it revolves around the question of what was it about these little smush-faced buggers that made them so appealing as like this kind of iconic emblem of this secret society? So to do that, we have to kind of think about that history of the pug dog that we talked about at the very beginning of the show, how long they've been around. In China, emperors were absolutely crazy about these little guys. There are even stories of certain Chinese like soothsayers reading the wrinkles on pugs' faces as some form of divination. And a little ways down in history, a lot of the European elite, folks ranging from Voltaire, you know, who was a very well-known outspoken writer, to Queen Victoria herself, were absolutely in love with them. So when King William III came to England from the Netherlands through an act of parliament in 1688 to take over for James II, who was extremely Catholic, he brought with him from the Netherlands these pug dogs, and they became in and of themselves kind of a signpost or like an emblem of the Enlightenment movement. And that
would
was,
you say a dog whistle?
I would absolutely say that. I would absolutely say that. Specifically in England. And a lot of these Enlightenment type intellectuals from Europe really admired the kind of free thinking government in England. And also, as a result, the idea of owning a pug became this kind of show of solidarity with this revolution that was going on. And it was something you could do like without getting arrested, which was a plus, or like tortured to death.
Yeah, the pug, by the way, in case we forget to mention this, the pug breed probably dates back to 400 BCE. That's how ancient it is. It's definitely not a newer breed. And at the time, pugs were a little bit more slender. And they were also, if you can imagine it, folks, they were also associated with mysteries. They were somewhat exotic, right? A dog no one had seen before. The point of this is that the order is most likely not taking a pug just out of the ether. It was already in the zeitgeist. It meant something to them. They had a reason for engaging with this particular dog whistle. They were progressive. They were surprisingly progressive. Women were allowed to be part of the organization as well as men, which I think is awesome. The Mopsis were considered a androgynous order. They, as written in the MasonicTrowel.com, which is great to read, by the way, they admitted women to every single office except for one, the Grand Master. That title was held for life. That's what a lot of those German princes of the empire got. There was, however, an analog position to that, a Grand Mistress. And the Grand Master and Grand Mistress roles would alternate every 6 months. And whomever was in power at that time had absolute authority over the order, over the meetings and stuff. And they did have something that was eccentric. It sounds pretty open-minded to not have a gender bias, but here's the catch. Here's the fine print at the bottom of the announcement. No, Casey, only Catholics could undergo the initiation ritual to join the Order of the Pug.
Interesting. I guess, but that makes sense, right? Because it was specifically like designed to protect Catholics, and they only have so much room for new members. So, let's reserve it for the folks that actually need it, right?
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's fair if we're being objective. But now, since we've done our due diligence being objective about one thing, we've got to talk about what I think is the funniest part of this, which is the initiation ritual. I want to start this off by saying that we are not being derogatory. We're not dogging on them, whatever. It's just funny. We think it's funny.
No, we're doggedly chasing the truth, Ben, is what we're doing.
There we go. Without being dogmatic about it. So let's put it this. Let's just walk you through this. This comes from, oddly enough, National Purebred Dog Day. You can learn the initiation ritual you would have to undergo. First, you have to be Catholic. Doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. You have to be Catholic.
Check.
Yep. You have to put on a dog collar. You have to get on all fours at the front door, and you have to scratch at the door.
Check. Check. Okay.
Yeah. What next?
It's getting a little. I'm getting a little more hesitant with these checks, Ben. Dog collar. Would someone have you on a leash, or were you like free roaming?
You're like a stray dog looking for a home.
But you got a collar. Dog. That implies ownership. I don't know. Who's your master at this? I mean, I don't know. I would love to see one of these, but alas, that's lost to history. They didn't have iPhones back then. So you're scratching at the door like a good little pug. And then these hooded figures, presumably on a leash, but maybe not. Maybe they would just hook their finger around the little loop in your collar. They would lead you around a carpet that was full of pug symbols 9 times. In a circle, I would hope.
Check.
Yep, got that. And then when the full group, the full order of the pugs of this particular chapter was assembled, and they actually called themselves pugs or mops, they barked loudly and yelled, "Memento mori!
Remember you shall die!"
Check. Definitely got that one. Gonna die. Okay. Not immediately, though. Just like big picture, right? It's important.
At some point.
It's important to acknowledge your mortality in the Order of the Pugs. But memento mori is a very popular expression within the Order of Freemasonry in general, correct?
Memento mori is just it's a banging expression. It's a bop. You can find it in so many places. The only problem with memento mori is you have to be careful not to overuse it in casual conversations with your friends at the pub, because you might sound a little bit melodramatic. But it fits here. These people are taking this seriously, so you have to remember. The three of us, and hopefully you, dear listener, might be chuckling when we tell you about this, but they were treating this with high dudgeon at this time. The final stage of the ritual involves a porcelain pug. So you've walked around 9 times, as Noel said, and then you're led to, you hear all these people barking at you and yelling, that one day everyone dies. And then you go to this porcelain pug sculpture and you have to kiss it specifically on its hindquarters beneath its tail. You're kissing the pug's Great Australia.
Yeah. Let's just go there. Specifically, not just the butt, the anus.
Yeah. You're kissing the pug's butthole. And this reaffirms your complete allegiance to the group. Now, sure, that might sound a bit humiliating for some people, but consider how lucky you are to be kissing a porcelain sculpture instead of an actual pug.
I gotta say, Ben, kissing the porcelain pug butt sounds like a pretty banging new expression for like having to puke.
It does. Yeah. For like a college student partying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Bro, Trevor's over there totally kissing the porcelain pug butt, bro. Like that.
It is important to note that when you do this, when you jump through all these hoops, or when you run this dog course, I should say, you get some swag out of this. You get to wear a special medallion. It's a pug medallion made of silver, and you hide it under your clothes. So when you see other mopses, you can, you know, maybe pull out your amulet and be like, yo, momento mori. Make a kissing sound of a kissing a pug butt.
I love it. Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, it is a dog whistle at that point, you know? I mean, that's the idea of a dog whistle, right? Is you're letting people know about something without coming right out and saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Or using symbolic language that only certain people in the know will register, like the sound of a dog whistle. Sorry if I am insulting anyone's intelligence with this description of what a dog whistle is. I know you're smart out there, folks.
Or son of a fish, or straight up seahorse teeth. Longtime listeners, you know what's up. We've got our own kind of order. No pugs yet, but we're working on some stuff. So porcelain, right? That's kind of an expensive thing. It's not something people just have. It turns out we know about this porcelain pug partially because, that was a weird tongue twister, we know about this porcelain pug partially because of a German sculptor and model maker named Johann Kandler. From 1740 to 1745, he was commissioned to make these sculptures. He made a series of sculptures, a group of porcelain pug dolls that were designed to be the secret emblems of the Order of the Pug. And he talks about it. Like, we have on historical record his logbook where he's saying, I'm making all these pug figurines. Some are probably for the King of Poland. You know, today I made a female dog with a puppy, and then later I made a male dog.
Are these kind of like Hummels? You know, Hummels? They're really, really collectible little porcelain guys. There's like the young shepherd's boy. That's a really popular one. They go for like quite a lot of money on eBay. And there's also a thing that Carmela Soprano had in The Sopranos that was like kind of an Italian equivalent of this. There's a specific name for it. It's these porcelain figures of like very elaborately dressed women. And I can't remember the damn name of it, but if anyone remembers that, let us know. There's a whole thing where like AJ has this girlfriend that he brings over. He doesn't realize that her family's like super rich, like mega Mondo, like, you know, billionaire type rich. And it puts him in his place when he realizes how much cooler her house is than, you know, the Sopranos' quite lovely New Jersey estate. But she's being very protective of this porcelain thing and remarking upon it how it's like very special and expensive, and the girl kind of plays along, but then they go to her house and she has like, her parents have like Picassos on the wall and stuff. So yeah, porcelain has always kind of like held this place of sort of bespokeness because it was more of a delicate material and not something everyone could have. Augustus III, however, who was the Grand Master of the Order of the Pugs in Saxony, and a company called Meissen manufactured a bunch of porcelain pugs in the early 1740s that were used for these ceremonies. I do want to point out, too, pugs around this time were a little different than they are today. They were skinnier. You know, I think of a pug as like a mini bulldog almost. They're a little stout and they've got kind of big round heads. These pugs were a lot more genteel. And if you see some of these sculptures, not of the pugs themselves necessarily, but of like women from the time posing with pugs, kind of peeking out from under their skirts and all that, they're a lot more dainty looking.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, the pugs were more slender at this time. They didn't have the famous pug rolls that you may see in the modern day pug. And that's, you know, that's active breeding. That's also, we got to admit, part of that's diet, pug owners. So the big question, is your local community inundated with a secret pug-based order dating back to the Age of Enlightenment? The answer is probably not, because in 1745, this order was busted. Its secrets were exposed in a book published in Amsterdam that detailed that initiation ritual as well as illustrations of the ritual. Just 3 years later, 1748, the Order of the Pugs was officially outlawed. This was probably due to that publication, which had been referred to as a traitor's pamphlet.
Either it was a whistleblower, a dog whistleblower.
There we go. And the authorities of the University of Göttingen, what do you think?
Göttingen.
Thank you. They banned something called Lodge Louis, the student lodge of the Order of the Pug. And this turned out to be the death knell. This was the final howl of the pug. They came up with some excuses, some technicalities. They said, you know, you have an unhealthy influence over members of the lodge, and it's unfair for you to charge these students all these fees. So we're shutting it down. But it still went on in secret. Now it's even deeper into the conspiratorial onion. These people were still doing their pug stuff in well into the 1900s, into 1902 is the last record we have.
I love that you resisted the urge to say pug butt stuff, but I'm going to do it for you. So first of all, masonry is outlawed. Then the pugs are an answer to that. And then the pug order is outlawed. So then it has to go even deeper underground. I love this. I love these layers of secrecy. It's a lot of fun. As recently, relatively speaking, as 1902, the order was reported to be active in Lyon. Then in 1751, Pope Benedict the XIV, Ben, help me out with the Roman numeral.
Pope Benedict the 14th.
That's right. The I goes before the V and makes it a 4. Oh, I really need to brush up on my Roman numerals. You know those ones at the end of movies, how they use it to like spell out like an entire year and they're like massively long? Those are a lot of fun. Never would be able to make heads or tails of those in a million years. But yeah, it's true. The Pope, once again, through a papal bull, this time known as Providus Romanorum, he put the kibosh even further on Freemasonry.
Yeah, that's right. Freemasonry was also still the subject of intense concern for the Catholic Church, pugs aside. And here our episode probably draws to a close because Freemasonry is, as I like to say, its own bag of badgers. So before we go on a crazy rabbit hole, or should I say a crazy pug hole, that's a weird phrase.
Into crazy pug butthole.
I'm not going to do it. Into right. Freemasonry. We're going to stop today's episode. We hope that you had a wonderful time. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Casey Pegram. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed the...
Oh, no.
Oh, come on.
It's time, gentlemen.
Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister, you've Zoom bombed us yet again.
Yes, yes, you haven't figured out how to change the URL.
There certainly was an absence, I will say that. I don't know if it was a palpable absence, but, you know, I'm softening to you, Jonathan. I'm sort of like having a hard time maintaining this whole nemesis thing because we're all so lonely.
It's true. I frequently find myself quizzing my dog and he just couldn't care less. And it's not the same at all.
You don't have a pug, do you?
I do not. I have a mutt.
Yeah. You know, Jonathan, first off, I have to say for everybody not watching today's episode, because we are an audio podcast, your beard looks great. One,
thank
keep
you.
That.
Thank
take
you.
It with you. That's a compliment, and I mean it. Secondly, I got to say, you guys, I'm not super lonely. I'm thrilled. I love these days of quarantine. Wait, Jonathan just put on his fancy new glasses. Dude, are you swagging on us?
A little swagger. I have to take the victories wherever I can at this point, Bolin.
Duly noted, Quister. Duly noted.
Shall I explain what this is all about? This for those who have not been so fortunate as to experience a Quister segment before?
I guess you might as well.
Welcome to the most cringeworthy segment in all of podcasting. I, the Quister, shall quiz our beloved hosts with three scenarios, and they must tell me which of the three scenarios is made upsies. Yes, I have made upsies one of the three. They will, at this time, I am allowing you to ask me questions. I know, I am mercurial, I change back and forth, but of course, you must preface any question with a phrase that is arbitrarily of my own choosing, and for this one, it shall be Mekalekahai Mekahiniho. So.
Oh, that's a feature that really was fun, that sort of went away when you forbade us from asking questions. So I'm glad to see that one coming back, Jonathan.
I felt left out while you guys were, like, talking about things, and, you know, I just sat here for 3 minutes, because you get 3 minutes to decide which one's real, and I don't like that part. So no, we are going to have the questions return. I may or may not know the answers because, frankly, you know that pug butt?
Mm-hmm.
I gave about half a pug butt worth of effort on this one, guys. I'm not going to lie. All right. So I will present to you three scenarios. We will start the timer. You will begin to debate. You will choose one of the three as fake, and then I will tell you if you got it right or not. So with that in mind, here are your three scenarios. The Independent Order of the Odd Fellows is a fraternal order that traces its history at least to the mid-18th century, and at one time counted more members among its number than the Freemasons here in America. Eleanor Roosevelt was an Odd Fellow. Charlie Chaplin, an Odd Fellow. P.T. Barnum, oh, you'd best believe he was an Odd Fellow. Their three guiding principles are friendship, love, and truth. Scenario 2. The ancient order of the Druids isn't that ancient. It was founded in the late 18th century as a fraternal order and secret society. The basis for the order wasn't so much druidic as it was Masonic, influenced by Jacob Boehmer, a Christian mystic of some renown. While the order strives to spread druidic ideals throughout the world, it also claims to be a non-religious fraternal order. Scenario 3. The earliest record for the Loyal Order of Water Buffaloes dates to just before the 19th century. Members of the order will claim that the organization predates even the Freemasons under various names, but it appears that the truth is that a group of tradesmen, frustrated by the lengthy initiation processes of orders like the Freemasons, decided to make their own order. Start the clock.
Okay, hang on, I'm running. I'm running to this. I should have, when I moved this grandfather clock, I really should have put it at least close to the microphone. Hang on.
Jeez, Ben, how big is your room?
And go!
I think it's just stalling.
Go, okay, 3 minutes. Mekalekahai, Mekahidiho, Jonathan,
yes,
Strickland,
Mr. Bolin,
a.k.a. the Quister. What was the name of that third organization?
The Loyal Order of the Water Buffaloes.
I mean, okay, so I'm pretty sure all of these are real, these orders. So I don't know, like, what the detail is that he's jacking with to try to mess with our minds here. I know the Odd Fellows is real. I've definitely heard of that. And I know the Royal Order or the whatever Water Buffalo thing is also real. What was Mekalekahai Mekahiniho?
Yes, Mr. Brown.
What was the second one?
The Ancient Order of the Druids.
Oh, that's the one. The Druids, also real. Did feel like we know about druidic sacrifices. Is that trumped up, Ben? What do you know about this stuff from stuff they don't want you to know?
So I may not be the most help here because I am not 100% on water buffalo. But hey, hang on. I got to say, okay. Wait.
Wait a minute. Mekalekahai,
Mekahai.
Wait, was water buffalo from the Flintstones?
I think it's it. Yeah, I think it is. Do all three of these organizations have living, non-animated human beings as members?
Currently? Do you mean currently?
I'll play your reindeer games. I see that Matrix dodge. Yeah, currently.
No.
Okay.
Not all three.
Yeah, no, I think
it's water buffalo.
It's the Flintstones. Yeah. And the Grand Poobah. I'm pretty sure it was the water buffalo. Yeah. Hold on. Let me just make sure.
All right, let's lock it in.
All right, should we lock it in three as fakesies?
Yeah, lock it in. Three, two,
three,
one.
Three, two, one.
Fake.
Locked.
Well, congratulations. Your knowledge of Hanna-Barbera has proven strong. Look, don't celebrate. This was the easiest one I've given you so far. I wanted to set the bar. See, this is what I was doing. I was thinking, I'm going to set the bar. If they can't recognize a Hanna-Barbera reference, then clearly I am putting far too much effort into these segments. What? Now you have convinced me that I need to do at least more than the bare minimum. Congratulations.
Here's the thing, though, Jonathan. The reason it got me is everything sounds so authoritative when you say it in that awful British accent.
That's part of the gig.
I think it's a great accent. And also, that was pretty close. I was freaking myself out because as soon as you said Oddfellows, I knew one of them wouldn't be true. And then as soon as you said Water Buffalo, I thought, you know, I have read so much about these secret societies that surely, and this was maybe arrogant of me, I was like, surely I'm going to know, I would have heard something more about Water Buffalo. At this point, I would have done an episode on it, or Noel and I would have. And so
I think I was conflating in my mind with like the Elks Lodge. You know what I mean?
There's the Elks and there's also the Order of the Moose.
Yes.
There are a lot of other orders. I mean, clearly when they were making the Flintstones and deciding to create a fraternal order, they based it off of other existing fraternities. And so Water Buffalo came to be. And that's why I felt that this was a coin flip situation, because I realized that this is one where you might have heard of it, but I wasn't certain how deep your Flintstones knowledge went. But at the same time, if you got it wrong, I was just going to lord it over you to the end of time.
I was right about the Grand Poobah, though. Isn't that the leader?
Grand Poobah. The Grand Poobah is the leader of the Water Buffaloes.
All right.
And the Stonemasons, shout out to the Stonemasons, right? Is that what their name is in The Simpsons?
Yes, I believe
Stone so. Cutters. Stone, no, cutters. Stone Cutters.
Yes, the Stone Cutters, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's Stone right. Cutters, that's right. The one.
Great episode.
Well, I think we should start our own order, of some sort. I've always, ever since I've been working here and doing this podcast stuff, I've always been starting cults or orders. You can see me convincing Jonathan to join a cult led by our friend Matt Frederick somewhere on YouTube. Well, let's get some suggestions from people. What do you think, guys? Let's get some suggestions for the name of our secret order.
Keeping in mind that Pug Butt is already taken.
Yeah, that's a bummer. That's a real pug pug bummer. So Jonathan, I think out of our immense, profound respect for you and tossing us a softball there, I motion that you should be able to choose your own title in whatever this order ends up becoming, subject to approval by Casey Pecker.
Well, I mean, Quizster really just fits, really. I mean, that's just, it's not just a lifestyle. It's also my title. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I'm like the wind, baby. You can't control me.
What, do you want to be the Grand Quizster or the High Quizster? His Eminence the Quizster?
Mm-hmm. The High Quizster sounds good. That goes along with my plans for later today. So let's go with that one.
All right. Well, I can get behind that.
I never thought I would see the day where you made that kind of joke, Jonathan.
Well, it's 420 somewhere. It's
I miss you, man. that's our show, right? I think so. I mean, thank you very much to Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quizster, for those ridiculous historians keeping track at home. Noel, I believe this makes us either tied or maybe slightly
we're one up now. We're one up.
You're one up on me.
Oh, man. Finally, I'll get some respect from my cats at this apartment.
And finally, I'll be able to sleep at night.
And finally, Casey will probably not change his behavior at all.
Fair. Huge thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit. Our research associate, Grand High Poobah, Gabe Lousier.
Big thanks, of course, to our apparently High Quizster, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the High Quizster now. And big thanks, of course, to our own Wizard of the East, Eve's Jeffcoat. Big thanks to you for tuning in. We hope this message finds you well. And if you are the happy person of a pug, then, you know, give them a hug. Send us a picture. You can find us all over the internet, Facebook, Twitter, the other one, Instagram. I almost said MySpace, but definitely Instagram. I don't think we have a MySpace. You can find our community page, Ridiculous Historians. You can also find us as individuals online.
That's correct. I am exclusively on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown, where you can follow my COVID cooking adventures and other isolated activities around the house. I got a hamster make an appearance every now and then. Hanako, the hamster.
And Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quizster, where can people find more of your work or, dare I say, your social media hot takes?
Oh, they can go to the Twitter and follow at John Strickland. That's J-O-N. Or if you really want to see cuteness, you go to Instagram and you look for at Tybalt Wonder Pup. That's my dog.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. I'm going to follow that. I'm a sucker for novelty accounts. You can find me at BenBolinHSW on Twitter. You can find me making a lot of survival kits at BenBolin on Instagram. What a pleasure. My last thanks to you guys, sincerely and surely. And Noel, thanks for getting into Pug Butts with me.
Anytime. It was my pleasure. We'll see you next time, folks.
Hug your pug.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.